listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
There is a major destructive force that hits almost every marriage that I see in trouble. That force is really resentment. But what we need to do is understand what resentment's about and how you back out of it. For the next couple of weeks on this podcast, I want to talk about how you deal with resentment, how you heal resentment. And the first week, this week, we want to talk about how you deal with the resentment within you. Next week, I want to talk about how you deal with the resentment in your spouse. Both are very important because one fuels the other. If you are full of resentment, if you're full of that response, of that anger response, you're going to create it and perpetrate it in your spouse. The perpetuation of this between two people becomes a very potent force. So first, let me give you a little background on what I understand as resentment. And it starts out a couple of steps before resentment. I believe that anger is the beginning point, but anger is the secondary emotion. So let's take one step further back. Anger is the secondary emotion to hurt. In fact, whenever you're experiencing hurt, it comes out oftentimes in ways that we would rather it not. Whenever you see somebody expressing anger, if you track back just a little bit, I think you'll discover the truth of it is they are either feeling hurt or fear or threat. Way deep within us, we have this protective mechanism that tries to repel anything that is seen as a threat. And so part of what happens when we feel threatened is we have an outward pushback. That outward pushback is all about that outward anger. And the problem is that we tend to respond to anger when it comes our way. So if our spouse is angry, we meet the anger with anger. If we are angry, our spouse will meet our anger with anger. And then we're stuck because as the anger spins around, it becomes more and more embedded. So the first piece of this understanding is to recognize that anger is the secondary emotion to hurt, to threat, to fear. Resentment is what happens when anger isn't addressed. Resentment is what happens when anger becomes a poison to the system. So if you think about it as an injury, you're walking along and you smack your shin into that table and you have that place on your shin that's kind of red and it hurts, right? That's the injury that hurts. That redness, it gets to be angry, right? And so as the anger grows, maybe you cut it a little bit and so there's anger there and that wound becomes inflamed and it shows outwardly. Now, if you don't treat that anger, if you don't treat that initial injury, it might get infected. At the point it becomes infected, it's become systemic. Resentment is the systemic expression of anger. Now, here's what tends to happen. Because we don't tend to do a good job of resolving the hurts, we don't do a good job of addressing the anger. And because we don't do a good job of addressing the anger, it often leads to the resentment. And the problem is resentment builds. It's kind of like you got an infection in your toe, and then you got one in your ankle, and one in your shin, and one in your knee, and then it happened in your hip, and up the body, and around the system it goes, and grows until the system is completely infected. It's unable to function healthily because of all the resentment that's in there. So we want to provide a little antibiotic. That's the antibiotics of this process of getting rid of the resentments. And so we start with our own resentments. You're taking your own antibiotic in to get rid of this infection. So if you find yourself suffering from this resentment, if you've heard me talk and you say, yep, that's me, I've got this resentment, I resent my spouse for whatever it might be, let me suggest that there are some steps in dealing with that resentment. The first step is to actually understand that anger and resentment is both habitual and addictive. I've had many couples that seem like the only way they knew how to relate anymore is through anger and resentment. They weren't even connecting with each other on the hurt, and they certainly weren't connecting with each other on a positive kind of connection. Instead, they were constantly finding themselves pulled into this anger and resentment that poisoned the system. Anger becomes habitual when we're not able to step back and recognize that we have this anger coming out. When we've allowed it to begin to kind of fester within us and become resentment, it grows into a habitual response. We respond in a habitual way. Not only that, but there's an addictive side to it because a lot of people get used to that feeling, that systemic place where the adrenaline is flowing in the midst of the conflict, the anger. Have you ever found yourself just kind of building up anger about something? Maybe there's some injustice you think is there, maybe some place that you feel mistreated, and so you go away and you start thinking about that event. The more you think about it, the more you feel it. The more you feel it, the more you think about it. The more you think about it, the more you feel it. And pretty soon your system is flowing on this adrenaline. It's revved up on adrenaline, which can feel very much like being alive, but it's very much a poison to the system. But that's the addictive side. We get used to being in that state, and we don't know what to do if we take it away. I've done enough work with people to know that if I take away their anger and we get that resentment dealt with, they sometimes don't know what else to do because they've gotten so used to that pattern. So the first thing is to recognize that many times our anger and our resentment, it's become habit and it's become addictive, and we have to be very careful about that addiction. The second thing to do is to accept that the past is. Just accept that it's happened. The past is the past, just as it is. Don't try to change it from the present. I believe that sometimes we have this reverse fatalism. Fatalism is believing that things are going to go a certain direction no matter what you do, and you can't change it. But there's this reverse fatalism where people want to redo what's already happened. And sometimes we need to allow there to be the fact that what has happened has already happened, that we need to allow what is to be what is and what was to be what was. My experience tells me that when people keep living into the anger and resentment, part of what they're often doing is trying to rework that history. Many times what they're trying to rework is their responsibility in that history. But as we keep thinking about the past and pondering what's happened and how we've been done wrong, you know, kind of like that country songs where somebody's done me wrong, we keep working on it until we have somehow convinced ourselves that things happened differently than they really did. So part of the task of coming to terms with our own anger and resentment is to accept the past as it is, not constantly trying to change it, but accept that the past is and is unchangeable. The third step is very difficult for many people, and that is to accept that the other person is much more innocent than you probably give them credit. I have this deep belief that people do the best they can where they are. All people do the best they can where they are. Now, this doesn't mean that we're all operating at some optimal level, but given what's going on around us, we do the best we can. In my almost a quarter of a century of working with people, I have yet to have somebody come in and say, you know what, I'm just not doing the best I can. I'm just kind of hanging out. I'm kind of making things go wrong. No, instead, I have people coming in saying, I don't know what to do. I can't get a grip on this. I'm doing the best I can, and it always goes south. We all do the best we can. And because of that, we have this primary place there where most of us are trying to come from a different place than how it's perceived. Most people react in ways and act in ways for themselves, not for against the other person, not to hurt the other person, but for themselves. When somebody does something that I can find to be painful, if I take some time to think about it, I realize they probably didn't mean to hurt me, but they were responding from their own hurt. They were responding from their own sense of pain. And if I can see that, I can begin to see they're a little more innocent than I would give credit. And so one of the tasks of giving up the resentment is to see the other person more innocent than perhaps you've given them credit. People do the best they can where they are, including you, and people don't set out to hurt other people, even if that's the side effect. So see the other person as innocent. The fourth thing is to take nothing personally. This is related to number three, but it's to take nothing personally. In one great book, the book that I really like, The Four Agreements, the author of The Four Agreements says that we can't take anything personal, that it's up not for us to take the things personal, but it's to allow it to be the other person's issue and to realize that all of these things come from the other person's defenses. This is how we understand that they're doing it for themselves, not to us. Ruaz speaks as one of the four agreements in life as not taking anything personally. He also talks about being impeccable with your word, which is helpful in this process, that you truly stand by your word. So if you say something, you truly mean it. Many times we say things in anger as partly a way of getting a rise out of the other person. And so speaking impeccably, being impeccable with your word, means that you decide to be clear about what you're saying instead of lashing out in your anger. We can talk more about that next week, but this week we want to pull out that agreement that we take nothing personal, that whatever the other person says, it's not meant to be personal the way it feels to us. So take nothing personal. Number five, give no illusion of power that comes with resentment. Just think about how many times we hold on to hurts and anger and resentment as a way of gaining power on the other person. We have something on them. They've hurt us and we're going to hold them. So many times I watch that in relationships as two people are struggling for control. And so they hold on to the hurts. They hold on to what's hurt them and angered them and caused the resentment as a place of getting power. You ever notice the people who seem to pout as a way of getting people motivated in different ways? You make them uncomfortable enough with your anger and your pouting that maybe they'll change their view. And so we have to be very careful to make sure that the resentment is not coming from that place, that resentment is not coming from a place of manipulation, of trying to find an upper hand, a way of having power over that other person. Step number six is to acknowledge your part, your role, and your responsibility in what happened. We are natural storytellers. Every human likes to tell the stories in our minds, and usually we tell the stories from our own advantage. So many times when I have people in my office, they'll start telling the story of hurt, and so one will tell me what the other person did wrong, the item, the reason that they have this anger and resentment. And they'll finish their story, and then the other person will say, yeah, but there's this other piece of the story before that, and they'll begin to tell their story one layer back. And that layer back casts a little different shadow on the person who just told the story of why they've been so hurt, done wrong, angry, and resented. So when that new person begins to speak, they're creating a new narrative of why this continued. And then the other person says, yeah, but there's another piece before that. And I'll be honest, many times I like to see just how far back they can go. And I'm pretty sure that if I let them go far enough back, they'll go right past their generation and figure out why it's their ancestors' reasons that they're having this reaction. We see it all over the world, right? We look at the cultural places where different groups hold others as the only ones that have victimized them. They're the victims of the process without seeing that there is another layer to it. There's another part of the story. And so part of healing your own resentment is to acknowledge your part in that process, to acknowledge your role in the conflict, your role in the disconnection, and accept your responsibility for how things got to that place. Now, let me be clear. There are some times when somebody is just victimized, when somebody out of the blue, somebody attacks them and the person did nothing to deserve it. That's not often the case when we're looking at marriages. There are some marriages that involve people who are have another issue going on, another psychological issue going on deep within them. They are the abusers, right? And let me be clear when I get to this place that if you find yourself in an abusive relationship, this is not where you try to figure out your responsibility. This is where you get yourself out. You take responsibility to get out of that relationship. So now I'm talking about the rest of the relationships, kind of the normal range of relationships where we often are more a part of the conflict and often are more at a root cause of the conflict than we would like to admit. We can't let go of the resentment until we recognize the role we played in how we get to that place. Number 7, the big one, is to choose to forgive and choose to let go. This is a very difficult step for some people because we get used to that role of resentment. We get used to telling ourselves that story of why we deserve to be angry and resentful. And what I've noticed is anger and resentment has no great payoff. Anger and resentment gives nothing to the relationship. It only robs the connection of the relationship. So we get to the place at the end of this process where we realize that it's up to us to choose to let go and forgive. The reason I say let go is because many of us have a natural reaction to the word forgive. We somehow have these false connotations of what it means to forgive. Forgiving is simply letting go of the hurt, letting go of the emotional fray of that. It doesn't mean relieving the other person of responsibility. It doesn't mean letting them off the hook. It doesn't mean that they get to go do it again. It just means that you choose not to carry it around. If you really want to get to the heart of healing your own place of resentment, it's simply to skip to this step. The other steps are all building to the place where you decide that you can forgive and that you can let go and that you can move on. It's that simple. If you need help with forgiveness, if you need help with figuring out the forgiveness process, there's a link in the show notes to help you get to that place. Recognize that once you've decided to forgive, that's only a piece of the step. But when you've decided to forgive, you have reclaimed your own place of power. Whenever we carry around the resentment, we stay poisoned. We stay attached to the hurt. We stay attached to the pain. And we stay attached to the idea that nothing good can happen. When we decide to let go, when we decide to forgive, we open new options and new opportunities for the relationship to come to a new place. If you're struggling with that, please check out the resources on how to forgive. The big point of today's podcast is to recognize that your resentment is really tracking back to the initial hurt. If you can get back to the hurt, you can begin to release it. You can begin to find that that other person likely did not mean to cause you harm. Likely was doing the best they can where they were, and it gives you a chance of reestablishing that relationship. Next week, we'll talk about how to help with the resentment in your spouse. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.